Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 8th of November 2019. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Little Eyes Sights in City, Christmas Strikes Loom on Railways, and Public See Plans for Incinerator. So may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Daphne.
Yes, now the first item, Little Eyes Sights in City. A major discount supermarket has its eye on Winchester after bosses revealed plans to expand across the south. Budget retailer Little plans to double its portfolio and continue its phenomenal growth. The German chain is now looking for great quality locations to open new stores. Winchester City Centre is one of nine sites earmarked by Lidl, although the city already has a Sainsbury's, Tesco and Iceland close to the High Street. The chain has also announced that it has its sights on opening a new store in Badger Farm. Despite the company's plans to expand, it has not given details of any specific sites. Winchester City Councillor and Cabinet Member Martin Todd welcomed the news that it could offer better prices for residents. He said, "It is good to see that there is still real enthusiasm from national retailers to invest in Winchester. If that helps keep shopping more affordable for people, that can only be a good thing. I think competition is a good thing, and if that helps keep prices down and improves the offer for people, that is good." He added, "I am still encouraged that people want to invest in Winchester. It's good that we have shops for tourists and visitors. We need shops that work for everyone, for people no matter what budget. Anything that keeps people coming into the city centre can only be a good thing." And Winchester Business Improvement District Executive Director Paul Spencer aired mixed feelings about the mooted plans due to existing supermarkets. Dr. Spencer said, "Winchester is already well served by supermarkets, both in the city centre and on the outskirts of the city. But Lidl could offer local residents more choice and a wider range of price points. It is always positive to know that retailers are interested in Winchester as a location, but the suitability of a new supermarket opening and the impact on existing businesses will very much depend on the particular sites which Lidl are considering." A spokesperson for Lidl said, "As part of ongoing national expansion plans, our dedicated property teams are working hard to identify suitable locations across England, Scotland and Wales. This is both for new stores where there is demand for a Lidl and existing stores that we would like to remodel for customers, which may require a location to do so. We would encourage any landowners or agents who may be aware of suitable sites to get in touch with our property teams to discuss."
Christmas strikes loom on railways. Passengers on South Western Railway are set to face major disruption on the railway next month after workers announced fresh strikes. Workers on South Western Railway are to strike for 27 days before the end of the year in the long-running dispute over guards on trains. Members of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union will walk out between December the 2nd and New Year's Day, threatening travel chaos for commuters and Christmas shoppers. RMT General Secretary Mick Cash said, "Our members have been left with no choice but to call a further 27 days of strike action on South Western Railway. At the last meeting we held with SWR, principles and agreements were made in good faith with the company's negotiating team, and we now feel hugely let down again. As long as the company continues to refuse to give assurances on the future operational role of the Guard, we will remain in dispute. I want to congratulate our members on their continued resolve in their fight for safety and the role of the Guard on SWR. It is wholly down to the management side that the core issue of the safety critical competencies and the role of the Guard has not been agreed. RMT members will not book on for duty from 1 minute past midnight on Monday the 2nd of December until 23:59 on Wednesday the 11th of December, and from 1 minute past midnight on Friday the 13th of December until 23:59 on Tuesday the 24th of December, and then again from 1 minute past midnight on Friday the 27th of December until 23:59 on January the 1st. The RMT accused the company of dangling a potential breakthrough deal in front of the union and then failing to honour it, offering no reasons for the delay. SWR has been contacted for comment. And this article is accompanied by a little picture of a South Western train.
Public see plans for incinerator. A campaign group fighting the proposed incinerator close to Barton Stacey has said there are a number of unanswered questions, as hundreds of pages of documents have been published by the American company Wheelabrator. The business proposes a waste-to-energy facility just north of the A303, and last week was the first time the public was able to review the plans and have a say on the proposals. Keep Test Valley Beautiful, KTVB, has been trawling through the paperwork, with experts also casting their eye ahead of public consultation sessions. Among them are details of how Wheelabrator plan to source large quantities of water without draining the local aquifer, which is already under pressure. The river test is just a few hundred metres away and is already at its lowest level for years. Anything that takes significant amounts of water could be very damaging to the environment and the world-famous fishing tourist industry that rely on the river. Wheelabrator says it will require the same amount of water as consumed by about 1,185 households, enough to fill an Olympic swimming pool each week. But KTVB say that is more than the combined consumption of several local villages surrounding the proposed plant. Wheelabrator has also revealed a new, slightly smaller design with a curved roof. Mr. Jolliffe said it will still have the footprint of two Winchester cathedrals and be just as tall. Looking at some of the mock-up images they have provided, one would hardly know it was there. It is insulting the public to imagine they can get away with showing a grey building against a grey sky. And they've very conveniently hidden a second turbine hall behind the main building, which is in itself another huge building at 30 metres high. Paul Green, Vice President for Business Development at Wheelabrator, said, "Since we held our first stage of consultation, we've been considering the feedback we received and adding a lot more detail to our proposals in the areas that we know are important to local people. Our assessment work is continuing, and we will add even more detail as we finalise our application. but this consultation represents an opportunity for the community to consider how our proposals have changed and give us their views on those changes. Our proposals represent an environmentally responsible opportunity to divert a large proportion of this waste from being sent to landfill or exported overseas. The group is urging people to attend Wheeler Brater's community consultation event on Thursday, November the 14th, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. in the Village Hall at Barton Stacey, postcode SO213RW, and on Wednesday, November the 20th, from 2:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. in the Victoria Hall at Sutton Scotney, postcode SO213GX. There are in fact two photographs accompanying this article. The first one shows the proposed building in a landscape, and it does look very futuristic and large. And in fact, there is a minute lorry just coming into the picture, which gives a bit of an idea of scale. And then under that, a small picture showing some of the hundreds of people who attended an exhibition about it in Long Parish. Keep Test Valley Beautiful, people. KTVB.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Betts, Dr. Peter Ryder Betts, aged 76. Catling, Dorothy Catling, peacefully in Abbott Spartan Nursing Home, aged 75. Cook, Geoffrey Francis Cook, aged 90. Dixon, Nancy Elizabeth Dixon, peacefully at Fig House Care Home, aged 95. Dominey, Ron Dominey, peacefully at home, aged 91. Doney, Dr. Brian John Doney, peacefully aged 82. Francis, Gloria Denise Leslie Francis, peacefully after a long illness, aged 70. Gibson, Jean Obrisha Gibson, peacefully aged 92. Gray, David Hall Gray, peacefully at home, aged 91. Green, Douglas Frank Green. Gwyn Howell, Jennifer Fay Gwyn Howell, peacefully at Westacre Nursing Home, aged 85. Haskell, Graham Haskell. Hayes, Carol Jennifer Hayes, at home in Alsford. Howe Clark, Joy Howe Clark, peacefully at home, aged 95. Jeffries, William Jeffries, peacefully aged 84. McClure, Patrick McClure, at home aged 80. Oxley, Derek Oxley, peacefully at the Countess of Brennock Hospice, aged 63. And Southern, Eleanor Mary Sutton, peacefully aged 69. Christian comment this week is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
And Christian comment comes from the Reverend Philip Crinks, and it is headed Remembrance and Forgiveness. In 1939, Eric Lomax left his job as a telegraphist and joined the Royal Corps of Signals. Attached to the 5th Field Regiment, Royal Artillery, he assisted in the defence of Singapore. Captured by the Japanese, he was transferred to Kanchanaburi in Thailand. There, along with 60,000 prisoners and 200,000 local civilians, he was forced to work on the new Burma Railway. In 1943, a clandestine radio was found in the camp, together with a map allegedly made by Lomax. He was interrogated and brutally tortured by the Japanese military police. Convicted, he was imprisoned in Singapore for the remainder of the war. In 1943, a young Japanese officer, Takashi Nagase, who had learned English from an American Methodist in Tokyo, was working as an interpreter. He was the translator in Lomax's interrogation and witnessed his torture. At the end of the war, Nagazi was traumatized and felt bitter remorse. He became a Buddhist priest and set out to atone for the mistreatment of Japan's prisoners. He made 100 missions of atonement to the River Kwai. In 1969, he assisted former prisoner John Coast in making the documentary Return to the River Kwai to reveal the truth about the horrific events. In 1976, he organised a meeting of reconciliation between former Japanese soldiers and their prisoners. His River Kwai Peace Foundation gave 1,000 scholarships to students in Kanchanaburi and helped build memorials to the dead. In 1990, a copy of a book written by Nagazi was sent to Lomax. He was startled to find it mentioned an interrogation, clearly his own. His wife, Patty, wrote a letter to Nagazi, furious in its tone. At first, she could not open Nagazi's reply, but when she read it, she found it beautiful and sincere. Until that time, Lomax had shared what he called the traditional POW attitude, don't forget, don't forgive. But more letters and phone calls led to an offer to meet. Believing now that Nagazi was totally genuine, in 1993, the Lomaxes travelled first to the site of the torture, then to be received with honour in Nagazi's hometown. The two very brave old men, as Patty Lomax called them, found not enmity, but a common human experience in their post-war lives. They even had nightmares in common. Lomax realised that for all Nagazi's efforts to atone, he could not find peace without his forgiveness. He said he could never forget, but he offered his total forgiveness. Guilt for what had happened was not for Nagazi to carry on his own shoulders. Lomax's 1995 autobiography, The Railway Man, was full of truthful and painful remembrance, but it also showed the fragile and precious possibility of peace through forgiveness. The events of 1993 changed Lomax's life forever. As he says, sometimes the hating has to stop. If you forgive other people when they sin against you, your Heavenly Father will also forgive you. Lord, forgive us our debts and help us to forgive our debtors. And that came from the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is priest in charge of St. Faith's Parish in Winchester.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Nick.
And this one is titled Unwelcome. Sir, the failure of the planning permission at station approach is worrying. We remain neutral about the City of Winchester Trust's views and actions, but it underlines why commercial developers avoid Winchester. They feel unwelcomed by the planners they are faced by, inconsistent decisions, and they are confused by what the locals want them to build. We propose that the Council should be creating a broad vision of the future of Winchester in 2040 and beyond that brings together the major issues affecting the district's way of life, its economy, its infrastructure, and its culture. It would be based on the views of the wider community so that it would be politically viable and take account of everyone's interests. This vision would be created by working initially with a representative group of residents, businesses, and other stakeholders, including the university and local voluntary organisations. They would identify the main challenges, opportunities, and risks, and set out how they think that we could secure a sustainable future for Winchester. This would be set out for comments by the public, and finally adopted by the Council. It would make all of us feel part of the process and responsible for its successful execution, as well as giving people an opportunity to make clear their priorities. The aim of this proposal is to clearly link plans with actions and to integrate our heritage with the major themes for cities of the 21st century: energy, education, communication, the environment, and the digital economy. It would encourage investors, appeal to younger people, attract visitors, and move our economy forward. We have discussed this proposal with a wide range of stakeholders who have unanimously indicated support, but we have been met with polite indifference by the council. There is now a pressing need for a joined-up 20-year plan for the local economy. This requires council leadership and the community support. It is done successfully in other cities, so why not in Winchester? And that's from Nicholas Craig Harvey and Richard Cotton from Sparsholt.
This letter from Steve Marper is headed Tree Vision. Sir, in rectifying the planning process omissions pointed out by the City of Winchester Trust, as reported in last week's Chronicle, I very much hope that this will result in a proper plan for the garden and trees, a very important element of the site, already highlighted by Bill Hode, Kate McIntosh, and Lady Stansfield Smith in previous issues. Indeed, may I suggest that the council authorities instruct the contractors to review and initiate proper steps to renew the health of the city's trees in general. The avenue near the Hampshire Record Office is already apparently categorised as having remedial defects, having been allowed to deteriorate to Category B. The row of trees in the pedestrian part of Middle Brook Street are now being damaged by the enclosing metal cages that they have outgrown. The trunks of saplings and small trees in River Park Recreation Ground, some planted as memorials, have been damaged by what appears to be inappropriate strimming of the surrounding grass and delayed replacement of the supports used when planting the trees initially. I believe the value of urban trees is well accepted, notably in benefiting both the visual appearance and air quality of a city. The sort of initiative that I propose would deliver these benefits and also perhaps provide a positive signal to city residents and others of the council's commitment to this important element of our environment. And that letter is from Steve Marper, Monk's Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Simon Lever. Sir, there was ample opportunity by all parties and associated interest groups to discuss and arrive at a suitable design for station approach. Indeed, modifications were applied, including reducing the height of the main building. Chronicle, October 31. Although I empathise with the concerns regarding the green areas, including trees, this was only very recently raised as an issue. As for the City of Winchester Trust, again, any concerns have been left until the scheme was being given the go-ahead. Winchester risks losing the substantial grant associated with the building of station approach and its substantial benefits. I have always promoted the concept of all parties being involved in the original plans to ensure, where feasible, the project moves ahead for the overall benefit of the city and residents. Station Close would provide more benefits than problems. Who will pay for the legal challenge? Perhaps Councillor Gottlieb, who has seemingly created extreme negativity regarding every plan presented and agreed by both the previous Conservative Council and the current Council administrations, and for the sake of whom? Surely it cannot be rocket science for all interested parties to sit down and work together, arriving at a viable solution. However, this should have been done when this worthy scheme was first presented. And that is from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
In the next letter, Rosemary Poole asks, new university building, any good? Sir, there are old buildings and new buildings, tall buildings and short buildings. And for me, there is nothing nicer to look at than a building built from local materials sitting comfortably among its neighbours and respecting its natural surroundings. The pleasure is the same, whether it's a stone cottage nestling on a Welsh hillside or an elegant townhouse in a Regency Terrace in London. In recent years, we have had to contend with a plethora of modern buildings in the wrong place. And into this category, I place the monstrous edifice that is rising from what used to be a nice green space alongside West Downs in the Romsey Road. It is difficult to believe that anyone with any taste at all or any sensitivity to the unique and precious quality of Winchester could have designed such a grossly overpowering building, and to add insult to injury, to have decided that rust was the new in colour. Looking back, I don't remember that we were ever consulted about the eventual size of the university, but its unreasonably rapid growth in relation to the size of the city and the roads around the campus has caused all sorts of problems relating to the provision of accommodation for the students and staff. And that letter's from Rosemary Poole, St James Villas, Winchester.
Neil Dewey writes about house prices. Sir, may I add support to Rupert Pitt's letter in the Chronicle of October the 31st concerning house prices from, I suspect, the very different perspective of a lifelong conservative, architect and housing developer. House values require a radical intervention. Homes have become the most lucrative investment that almost anybody can make. The circle of low interest rate finance, the expectation of rising house prices, and ludicrous land values driven by that expectation, and planning restrictions which further escalate the eventual sales values of new houses while dragging existing stock with it. This needs to be broken. Owners do not want to lose money. Landlords can only charge a rent that relates to the cost of the property owned. And if prices were to go backwards, our economy would be broken. But a house should only be a home. Moving should overwhelmingly be a need, not an investment decision. There is also the problem of recycled inherited housing wealth. We cannot continue to see the distortion of opportunity related to passing on sums generated simply by living in some bricks and mortar. So, I believe there is a need to apply a swingeing tax to the housing transaction to stop the market distortions dead. If 100% tax was paid on the capital gain, the difference between sold and original purchase price, less professional and removable, not refurnishing, costs, nobody loses. But there would be no incentive to move for anything other than need. Instantly stabilising sales values, followed shortly thereafter by land prices. In time, only building costs and general inflation would raise prices, and homes would become more affordable for more people. A lesser percentage tax would have the same useless and distorting effect as the constant tinkering with stamp duty. I am aware there are complications when considering homes that have been lived in for most of the owners' lives, where care costs are involved, but I hope better brains than mine could solve this. I hope food for thought rather than instant condemnation by my fellow capitalists. Neil Dewey, Brayside Close, Oliver's Battery.
And now, Councillor David Stewart, who is chairman of the Hampshire Police and Crime Panel, writes the following. Sir, my thanks to your readers for playing an important role in helping to influence how Hampshire and Isle of Wight communities are kept safe and secure during 2018-19, participating in the scrutiny work of the Hampshire Police and Crime Panel, whose job it is to hold to account the Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, Michael Lane, in establishing his policing priorities. Our panel has published its annual report this week, detailing our activities to scrutinise, challenge and support the work of PCC Michael Lane. The input of members of the public in our yearly scrutiny activity is very valuable to our panel. It helps to inform and shape our work, and through people's participation in our proactive scrutiny sessions, we can undertake in-depth examination of the key issues which really matter to communities across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. During 2018-19, this proactive approach to scrutiny has been particularly positive, with residents and community representatives invited to share their views with the panel on hate crime and cyber fraud. During this year, we also began a broader piece of scrutiny work, looking at how the Commissioner is enabling effective and efficient operational policing for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, which has already gained national interest from government. The Police and Crime Panel's meetings are held in public on a quarterly basis, where residents have the opportunity to ask questions or to make a deputation and share their thoughts on matters of policing and community safety. Meeting dates are publicly available on the panel's web pages, and we actively encourage residents and the media to attend our meetings. Public participation remains key to ensuring that our scrutiny work is as thorough and informed as possible, and that any recommendations made to the Police and Crime Commissioner reflect the views of the communities in which we live. Discover more about how you can get involved in the panel's work. And I'm now going to give you rather a long email address. It is all lowercase. www.hants.gov.uk/about-the-council/government-in-hampshire/police-crime-panel/get-involved. And that comes from Councillor David Stewart, Chairman of the Hampshire Police and Crime Panel, the Castle, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Nick.
Yes, two short pieces from Monday, November the 8th, 1819. A melancholy accident occurred on Thursday last to a gentleman hunting with Sir John Cooper's hounds near Basingstoke. His horse became unmanageable and, running with great force into a tree, dashed the rider to pieces. And the second piece. A correspondent observes that the present distress of the country does not appear to rise from the state of the money market or any default ruling powers, but chiefly from the poverty of the continent of Europe and its consequence, the want of market for our manufacturers.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, November the 8th, 1919, we have a science note. Engineers distinguish in the details of a structure between compression members, such as pillars bearing weight, and tensile members, such as the iron ties, which tie together the north and south walls of the cathedral transepts. Water, as a subject for compression, has been discussed. It is not so easy to think of it as having tensile strength, which resists, but can be forced to allow some enlargement of itself. The second piece, same date. In the absence of the mayor, who was attending the luncheon given by the Lord Mayor of London, Mr. H. Head presided at the general meeting of the Winchester Chamber of Commerce. Before the lecture, Mr. Head mooted the desirability of the chamber purchasing an addressograph for the use of members addressing bill heads and envelopes. The machine was costly if purchased by an individual, but it would not be felt if obtained for cooperative use.
And 50 years ago, on Saturday, November the 8th, 1969, we have two items. The John Stripe Theatre, the latest addition to the King Alfred's College campus in Sparkford Road, was officially opened on Friday of last week by Sir Alec Clegg, Education Officer for the West Riding of Yorkshire. He told an audience of past and present governors, students and local headmasters that there were three sharply defined sections of education. Firstly, the public and political, concerned with the organisation of the service. Secondly, the transmission of knowledge, the largest and easiest part. And thirdly, the most significant, the education of the spirit. He said, "By this I mean education which is concerned with our hopes and fears, our hates and enthusiasms, and our delight in beauty. Because we know so much about what we can measure, we tend to ignore those things which we cannot measure, and I rejoice that the building of this theatre is evidence for the concern of this feeling," he said. And the second item: every aspect of shopping, from advertising the product to buying it over the counter, was covered by a one-day conference attended by over 100 women in Ashburton Court, Winchester, on Wednesday. Entitled "You and Your Shopping," it was organised by the Public Questions, Education and International Subcommittee of the Hampshire Federation of Women's Institutes. During the day, four speakers with specialised knowledge aired their views and answered a battery of questions. Taking a perspective look into the future, Mr. Eric Greenhall, Managing Director of Peter Jones in London, foresaw large department stores moving into the country, supermarkets going away from existing town centres to the suburbs, and the establishment of purpose-built shopping centres away from towns.
And now we go back 25 years to Friday, November the 4th, 1994. And the first piece, Philip Usherwood lives close to Charles House in Sussex Street, Winchester, and has complained on 20 occasions this year already about noise coming from the nightclub. "There has been continual, very loud noise," Mr. Usherwood of Upper High Street told members of the city's Environmental Health Licensing Subcommittee on Wednesday. "When I have made personal representation to the owner, there has been a reduction in the volume. 20 minutes later, it has gone up again. I could make out the words of the music being played in the nightclub." Mr. Usherwood's was one of a number of complaints about noise. Pamela Peskett said that she was concerned about the numbers of people coming to the nightclub. She also thought that a recommended 6 months period for noise insulation measures to be carried out was a long time for neighbours to wait. Philip Norton, solicitor for Mr. Tang, one of the licensees, said the concerns expressed by neighbours were acknowledged. "The escape of noise has been given a great deal of attention already," Mr. Norton added. The licensee was prepared for a noise consultant to come in and make representations. The number of residents who had decided to complain had been reduced from this time last year, he said. And a second piece from 25 years ago. Health watchdogs are concerned to learn that Wessex is bottom of the blood-giving league. Chief Officer Dave Dean told members of the Basingstoke and North Hampshire Community Health Council that it was disturbing to learn there were fewer donors per 1,000 head of population in Wessex than anywhere else in the country. They agreed with him that it was a question of education and that the importance of giving blood should receive a higher profile, targeting areas where donor figures were low. They welcomed a 31-page document on the reorganisation of the National Blood Service. The main proposals were the creation of administrative zones based on North London, Bristol and Leeds, the consolidation of testing and processing activities leading to a reduction in the number of locations and an increase in the number of stockholding units to ensure that all hospitals are within 2 hours travelling time for emergency deliveries.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Frieda and will be followed by first person read by Nick. Thank you, Frieda.
Another supermarket heading to our city? How many supermarkets is too many? Winchester may be about to find out if German giant Lidl gets its way. The retailer has announced plans to build no fewer than 9 new stores across Hampshire and is eyeing 2 sites locally, in Winchester City Centre and Badger Farm. Where it would go in Badger Farm is unclear, and Lidl aren't saying. The good news is that the company, which seems popular among consumers, feels that new outlets will be sustainable. In turn, this will provide employment for people living in the area, as well as a greater choice of shops for cash-strapped residents to use. Currently, in Winchester, only Aldi in Week and Poundland on Middlebrook Street offer similar discounts. Lidl's arrival would also dissuade many people from driving to discount stores in places such as East Lee. A new supermarket in the city centre would help with footfall, because, as has been debated, Winchester needs to be more than a place where people come for a cup of coffee.
First person is entitled Deadline for Planet Earth by Joanna Lewis. 47-19-36. No, not my lucky lottery numbers. These are the number of lipsticks, winter coats and handbags I own respectively. I counted them last week. I was shocked and ashamed. I feel like going to confession though I'm not a Catholic. Father, it's been 3 weeks since my last three-quarter length transitional jacket. Or going to court. Guilty, my lord. And could I ask for another 36 pairs of shoes to be taken into consideration? What's even worse about these figures is that I only ever use 2 shades of Lippy and always have the same handbag. It's total madness. Yet I am passionate about saving the planet from global warming and loss of biodiversity. I lie awake at night, worried about the unprecedented rate of melting ice and rising sea levels. And if it would help stop the decline in hedgehogs, I would willingly attach myself to King Alfred's butt cheeks in protest. So I am a hypocrite. But so what? We all have to start doing something, from whatever position we can. Our spending habits, our sense of individual reward, our perceived material needs, are all enmeshed in a system of lavish consumption we can only withdraw from gradually. Unless, of course, you live in North Korea or Bracknell. It's all too easy for climate change deniers to attack environmental protesters who want to stop our reliance on fossil fuels, with the argument they live and enjoy a life based upon them. You have to feel for George Monbiot, head of the Green Party, who has spent his life reading all the science. At his big moment, when global protest is at its height, he is disparaged, amongst other things, for wearing a watch and having bulging eyes. Like many people, I am sometimes overwhelmed about how to find ways and the time to change everyday habits so as not to trash the planet. I'm a work in progress. I have not flown this year. I've only travelled by train out of Hampshire. I turn my garden over to pollinators, stop throwing food away, and avoid plastic packaging as much as supermarkets let me. I still have a long way to go, clearly. Clothes buying is the hardest area for me. In my first term at university, I'd spent all my grant money at Miss Selfridge by the second week. I survived on porridge and my mother posting me homemade bread. However, this summer I chose not to buy any new clothes. So shocked at the recent figures. As a country, we dump 235 million clothing items in landfill. Yet 100% is recyclable. The value of unused clothing in wardrobes is £30 billion. Clothing can take 200 years to break down, emitting gases more harmful than carbon. So I've been visiting some of Winchester's lovely pre-loved clothing shops. Last week, I sewed 3 tiny buttons into a cardigan. The concentration and dexterity required from me was equivalent to carrying out open heart surgery. Has anyone ever darned a sock? As I thought, 3 of you. And 2, because you'd learnt that in the armed forces. We've put repairing clothes on a par with operating heavy artillery. But this is the future. Repair if you dare. We are consuming a third more resources than the world can supply. One strategy is to have the rule of a third. Can I reduce what I spend on clothes, on car travel, by a third? We can shop locally and buy British. What if we pledged to buy this Christmas only from the High Street, from Winchester Independence, and what we need? And to prevent any green washing by the council over its supposed declaration of a climate emergency, let's fill in the Winchester City Council consultation exercise with lots of bold demands for local action to help stop the world heating up beyond the point of reversal. Deadline, November the 29th, 2019. Deadline for planet Earth.
Belgarum's alternative look at the week at news this week comprises 3 items, the first of which is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
Right, and the first part, connoisseurs of demolition will be enjoying the destruction of Voltex House on Barfield Close at Bar End. The site was bought by the City Council for an extension to the park and ride site. Workers from Wessex Demolition and Salvage are knocking down the building, a former cash store servicing ATMs across the area, bit by bit. As the photo taken yesterday morning shows, the process is well underway, and there is a photograph alongside showing a big orange mechanical digger with a grabber sorting through the pile of bricks and rubble that has been part of the demolishment. It's a shame no wrecking ball is involved, but at least the gradual process maximises what can be recycled.
This piece is entitled Online Update About Bins Chaos. When visiting Winchester City Council's website, Belgarum noticed an updated layout. The first thing that now flashes up on screen is a section entitled New Waste Collection Services, Help for Customers. Users are then given the option to click several different icons, allowing them to submit a complaint about bin collections. These are: My black bin wasn't emptied. My green recycling bin wasn't emptied. My glass collection box wasn't emptied. My garden waste sack was not collected. And my glass collection box hasn't arrived. That touches all bases. We knew things were bad, but having such a prominent section to report problems shows the extent of it. There is also an icon reading, Find Your Bin Collection Day. If the leaflets were distributed correctly, most people would have no need to look online. Meanwhile, the City Council is to consider which contractor should be handed the new contract for collection once the current one expires in October 2020. Biffer currently holds it, but is clearly not doing itself any favours at the moment.
And our third Belgarum piece. A plant more usually seen on wasteland. Buddleia is an adaptable plant, taking advantage of neglected nooks and crannies across the land. Also known as the butterfly bush, it has colonised waste or derelict land since it was introduced from China in Victorian times. But it is rarely seen in Winchester city centre, for obvious reasons. The High Street is not a wasteland, even if those are the predictions of gloommongers. This one was spotted between the Roxbury Bar and CEX Entertainment. Surely time for a spot of pruning by somebody? And it's accompanied by a photograph of a lovely buddleia poking out from between the two shops mentioned, right there in the High Street.
Now this week's announcements. Open Sight is holding one of its drop-in sessions for the first time in Winchester on Thursday the 14th of November between 10 a.m. and midday at the Discovery Centre. There's no need to make an appointment. Some daily living equipment will be available for demonstration and information about benefits and other matters can be obtained. And here are a number of events in and around Winchester in the coming days. On Thursday the 14th of November, the Christmas lights will be switched on at 4 p.m. The ceremony will take place in the Broadway outside the Guildhall and will be hosted by Heart Radio's Johnny Mayer. Also on Thursday the 14th of November, at 7:30 p.m. at Winchester Cathedral, Winchester Music Club Chorus and Orchestra, with Winchester College Choristers and Winchester Glee Club, will be performing Bernstein's Chichester Psalms, Durifle's Requiem, and Finzi's Lo, the Full of the Final Sacrifice. Welsh National Opera are visiting the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton, from the 26th to the 30th of November, with Bizet's Carmen, Verdi's Rigoletto, and Janáček's The Cunning Little Vixen. Full details are available at mayflower.org.uk. And finally, a reminder that the Winchester Christmas Market will be at the Cathedral Close from the 21st of November to the 22nd of December. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 8th of November at 7:09 and begins at 4:28 p.m. On Wednesday the 13th of November, it ends at 7:18 a.m. and begins at 4:21 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recordings you have received, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first piece is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
And this piece is headed First New Coroner in Winchester Since 1991. Hampshire County Council has welcomed its first new senior coroner in 28 years. Following the retirement of Graham Short, Chris Wilkinson has taken up the Winchester-based position. He has spent years of his career as assistant coroner in East and West Sussex, as well as being a partner in a private law firm. Mr. Wilkinson said, "I am absolutely delighted and immensely proud to be taking on the role of Hampshire's senior coroner. I am committed to a vision of excellence. By seeking to keep families of the bereaved at the heart of the coronial, I imagine that's how you say it, coronial service, I aim to ensure that those affected by death and loss are recognised fully and appropriately in their grief, and that the process of the investigation of the death can continue to be delivered in a caring and empathetic manner at all levels. I am keen to build on and develop an efficient, accessible, just and high-quality service to carry Hampshire's coroner service into a new era." The news comes as Hampshire's four coroner jurisdictions are under consultation to be merged into one new service, to provide a more consistent and high-performing service across the entire county. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Keith Manns, said, "This is a very significant and exciting appointment, as it represents the potential for a much more joined-up approach to Hampshire's coroner service. Chris has a wealth of experience and expertise that he brings to this role, and we look forward to seeing the coroner's service develop under his trusted leadership." And that's accompanied by a picture of Chris Wilkinson sitting, looking very efficient.
Detectorists discover more buried treasure under fields. Metal detectorists searching the fields of Hampshire have had golden luck, with two items recently being declared as treasure. An inquest heard how one lucky searcher found a piece of twisted golden torque from the Bronze Age in Swanmore. Andrew Aitken of Alton had been searching across farmland with a group when he made the discovery on April the 7th. Mr. Aitken told Winchester Coroner's Court that he didn't know the historical significance in that area relating to the age. The fragment is said to be around 41.6 millimetres in length, and it weighs just over 18 grams. The Hampshire Cultural Trust is thought to be interested in acquiring it following valuation at the British Museum in London. Another inquest heard how a brooch from the 14th century was discovered in farmland at Hursley. The golden ring-shaped item was retrieved by Waltham Chase detectorist Jeff Slingsby back in August 2018, who described the 35mm long brooch as a cracking bit of kit. He said, "I've been detecting in that area for several years. I found the brooch on ploughed land. It's a cracking bit of kit and it should be in a museum. It's the people's object." The words written on the brooch have been translated by a member of staff at the British Museum. They are thought to say something similar to, "May love, God protect me." The brooch will now go for valuation at the British Museum in London. Last week, the Chronicle reported on the find of 269 Iron Age coins in the Nursling Rownhams area by Kit Layman from Lymington, with two friends in January 2018. Those coins are currently being evaluated by the British Museum. And this piece is accompanied by a photograph of a pile of silver coins, the 269 Iron Age coins found in Nursling.
Satnav directs heavy lorry down narrow city street. The danger of relying on a satnav was shown in Winchester city centre. A heavy goods vehicle got stuck on the Broadway, trying to turn left into Colebrook Street, at around 5:45 on Friday. The driver of the Hallmark articulated lorry told passers-by he was trying to make a delivery to the back entrance of Boots on the Square, and this his sat-nav had told him was the best route. A member of the public helped the driver by directing its reversing down the Broadway and into the bus station, disrupting the rush hour flow of buses and cars for around 10 minutes. The lorry was last seen rumbling off up Eastgate Street, but it was unclear why someone thought it a good idea to make a delivery on a Friday evening at rush hour in a six-axle articulated lorry in Winchester. A spokesman for Boots said, "We're sorry to hear about this and for the inconvenience caused. We'll raise it with the supplier and have the feedback passed on to the appropriate teams." And there is a wonderful photograph, all in the early evening gloom and the rain. This vast lorry and his purple and gold livery makes him look rather like an enormous bar of chocolate.
New plan to save wildlife. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has launched a 10-year plan to create a wilder future for the two counties. It is calling for a trebling of the space for wildlife. In a speech to more than 350 members, local partners and guests at a conference in Winchester, Debbie Tan, chief executive, said, "We all know too well that wildlife is in freefall and we are facing an emergency. Locally, we've already lost so much, from the destruction of ancient woodlands, the pitiful condition of our chalk rivers, to the perilous state of endangered birds like nightingales and curlew. Even our wonderful local salt marshes in the Solent are washing away so quickly that they could disappear within a generation. Our wildlife and precious natural resources are facing pressure from all sides." The Trust, which has 26,000 members, is calling on everyone to play their part in delivering the Wilder 2030 plan, which includes a target of 1 to 4 people acting to support our local nature. The Trust is asking individuals and groups to step forward to create wilder streets and communities. An army of champions, trained and supported by the Trust, to campaign for and create change in their local communities or workplaces. Pushing for local government, national parks and other public bodies and businesses to take bold steps in both policy and practice. Offering new services to help farmers and developers deliver for nature. Doubling the land that the Trust manages. Exploring new wilder approaches, including the reintroduction of missing species like beavers. The Trust says that since 1970, 41% of species have declined and 1 in 7 are now at risk of extinction. Locally, there have been dramatic reductions in species such as water voles and nightingales. And there are several photographs there. There is a beautiful one of Barton Meadows. I suppose that's around the development. Must be in the summer. There are red poppies, daisies. It looks truly glorious. And some others of people at the conference.
The title for the next piece is "Councillor Tells Plan Inquiry of the Threats." Villages near Winchester will suffer from Eastleigh Borough Council's plans for 5,000 homes, County Councillor Jan Warwick told a local plan inspector. Eastleigh's proposal for 5,000 homes on Greenbelt land will lead to extra traffic and pollution in Otterbourne, Compton and Shawford. Councillor Warwick, who represents the Downlands division that covers the villages, said the authorities' Liberal Democrats had not listened to her residents who would be hit by the local plan to develop near the boundary with Winchester City Council. She explained there was no evidence around the timing, mitigation, funding and delivery for the proposed link road, or studies showing the impact on the existing road infrastructure. She also explained the carbon footprint for village residents would be enormous because the plan favours car use. And she asked, why wasn't a more sustainable location chosen, close to a rail link in this busy town originally founded around a railway network? The M3 at junctions 12 and 11 would also be impacted, but there was little data to explain or solve what will happen when the homes are built, with a sister traffic study from April this year unable to explain the potential impact of increased traffic volumes. There was also no reference in the sister study to the impact on M3 junction 11, the B335 and the Hockley link at the M3. This is a congested link every day during peak traffic times, with traffic backing up along the B335 through Twyford Village towards Colden Common. What is the proposed mitigation solution for increased traffic that will only worsen congestion at this junction, she said. She then asked, what will be the effect of additional traffic on the daily lives of my residents in terms of traffic congestion, noise, pollution, and to safely walk to school or the shops? And added, she wanted Eastleigh Borough Council to pay a financial contribution towards traffic calming measures and additional controlled pedestrian crossing points on Main Road, Otterbourne and Otterbourne Road, Compton. And by a picture of Councillor Warwick.
Cathedral Green dedicated to remember fallen heroes. Veterans and dignitaries fell silent in the city to dedicate ground for remembering those who gave their lives in war. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eleanor Bell, laid a poppy cross on the cathedral's green to begin the remembrance services on Monday, followed by members of the Royal British Legion, the RBL. A patch of grass in the shadow of the city's war memorial was dedicated as the Garden of Remembrance, where residents can leave poppies to honour those who fell in the two world wars and other conflicts. The Reverend Canon Roland Ream, Vice Dean and Canon Chancellor of Winchester Cathedral, dedicated the ground and read prayers. Members of the Buglers Association of the Light Division and the Rifles, David Mentz and Steve Vaughan, played the last post to begin the 2 minutes silence. Derek Green, chairman of the Winchester branch of the RBL, said, "We have got to remember all those who gave their lives for us to have a better life." And there is a lovely photograph, a lot of people standing in a half circle just by the war memorial in front of the west door of the cathedral. And you can see quite clearly an area with a little wall around it where people are beginning to lay their poppies.
Winchester Hospice is holding its first Light Up a Life service at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Tuesday, December the 10th. The service at the hospital will be held in the Butterfield Wing main reception at 6 p.m. Most hospices hold a Light Up a Life service around Christmas time, with people dedicating a light on the tree to someone that has passed away or to someone who is not with their loved ones at Christmas. The service will be followed by mince pies and mulled wine. Proceeds will go to the hospice appeal. The hospice is due to open in early 2021, but £1 million still needs to be raised. building work on the hospice at Burrell House, next to the hospital on Romsey Road, is due to start soon.
And this piece is entitled Charity Hopes to Return Photos to Family of Owner. They are snapshots of royal occasions and family photos that tell a thousand stories, but for years they have been sat unseen until now. Discovered while sorting out paperwork, MAS Hampshire in Bar End, Winchester, have come across a series of personal and historic royal photographs. And now the charity is looking to reunite them with the descendants of the original owner. Chief Executive Nigel Samuels believes that they must have come in as part of a donation many years ago. It appears that the pictures were taken for and owned by a member of the Chapel Royal, the Sovereign's spiritual choir. Piecing together some of the notes, the charity believes he may have been a J.W. Jim Saunders, who at some stage held the role of Sergeant of the Vestry, key member of H.M. Chapel Royal. We have not been able to find any reference to Mr. Saunders, so are appealing to the public for help, Nigel added. The photos show a series of royal occasions, including the silver wedding celebration of King George VI and Queen Elizabeth in 1948 and the Cenotaph Remembrance Ceremony of 1946. The owner has annotated the cardboard backing in the frames with the names and positions of people involved. There are also a couple of family photographs and pictures of the Chapel Royal in St James's Palace. He even sent his daughter Joan a card featuring a picture of the wedding certificate of Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip from November 1947. We discovered the pictures by chance when sorting paperwork to create space for our new building project. This will enable us to house and offer a fresh start to 8 more homeless people once we have secured the £60,000 balance of the £280,000 investment. If any readers know of this person or his family, we would be thrilled to contact them and return the pictures. Which one of our former volunteers must have stored carefully whenever we received the donation? This could have been any time in the past 10 years, but was probably at least 5 years ago. If any reader can help solve the puzzle, call 01962 868 300. That's 01962 868 300. Or email info@mashampshire.org.uk. And this piece is accompanied by a couple of the old photographs, a splendid event in the Royal Albert Hall, the hall full of bodies taken from the early part of the 20th century, and a family photo from around 100 years ago with a family photo of five with one of the chaps at the back dressed in uniform, looking similar to a World War I uniform, and the others in civilian clothes.
Lasting legacy as school aims to reduce carbon footprint. A Winchester school has benefited from the Woodland Trust Free Trees for Schools and Communities initiative. The Henry Beaufort Secondary School in Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, received 400 trees, coppice hedging and hedgerows to plant. This is a wonderful opportunity for staff and students to leave a lasting legacy for the future generations of the school and the wider community to enjoy. The school has a wide area which it is planting and looking forward to watching the trees grow. Sue Hurl, head teacher, said, "Our young people are very aware of the impact of climate change. They are undertaking a number of initiatives in school to reduce our carbon footprint. I am very grateful to the Woodland Trust for their generous donation that allows our school community to leave a positive legacy for future students. The school was built in 1971 as the first purpose-built co-educational comprehensive school in Winchester and now serves over 1,000 pupils. And there is a picture of the head teacher and two young lady students, planting a tree and looking really happy about it.
College animals enjoy a Halloween pumpkin treat. Humans were not the only ones who enjoyed some Halloween fun, as a Hampshire college included their furry friends. Happy creatures at Sparsholt's Animal Centre got into the spirit by chowing down and playing on some of the pumpkins. From Maya the Red Panda to Bobby the Budapest Short-Faced Tumbler, along with the black lemurs and meerkats, all enjoyed the Halloween-themed activity and adored their tasty treats. And there are some delightful pictures with this item. First of all, the meerkats, sitting up looking extremely alert the way they do as they're enjoying their pumpkin. Then we've got Bobby the Budapest Short-Faced Tumbler, which is a sort of pigeon by the look of it. Now, he's placed on top of a pumpkin, looking very satisfied with himself. And finally, Maya, the red panda at Sparsholt College. The red panda is most unusual colouring. Where you would expect to see white fur, it's a lovely squirrely red. Very interesting looking animal. And she, I think it's probably a she, is looking very keen to get her paws on the great big orange pumpkin in front of her.
World record mallow effort. A Winchester woman has made what she hopes will be the world's largest marshmallow. Belinda Clark, who runs a confectionery business based in the city, crafted the sweet treat in the shape of pudsey bears. The money raised from selling it will go to children in need. It took a whole day to make the 93.1 kilogram marshmallow at Barkhampstead School in Buckinghamshire, and a further few hours the next day to piece it together. Belinda said, "I had the idea to make a giant marshmallow a while ago, and my friend's son, Josh, suggested we produce it in the shape of Pudsey's head as a fundraiser." Josh goes to Barkhampstead School, and the executive chief of the school and I took all of one day to make it, and then following one to put Pudsey together. It was exciting and not a little stressful to do, as we weren't sure how we were going to turn the giant head out of the mould. But we did it. We then covered the head and ears in yellow-tinted coconut to look like fur, before decorating with facial features and a spotty scarf. Barkhampstead School will now submit the challenge to the Guinness Book of World Records as the world's largest marshmallow. A website to either donate or bid to win the mallow can be found at www.worldslargestmarshmallow.com. That's all one word, worldslargestmarshmallow.com. And that one's accompanied by a picture of the magnificent pudsey head shaped huge marshmallow. And Belinda Clark, Phil Clark, and the group executive from Barkhampstead School.
This piece is called Strong Demand for Santa Fun Run. Tickets are selling fast to the Naomi House and Jack's Place Santa Fun Run, with 500 Santas having already secured places. The Fun Run, suitable for people of all ages and abilities, is happening on Sunday, December the 1st in Winchester High Street. This is the 11th year the hospice has hosted the event, which features hundreds of people taking to the streets of Winchester with families and friends, and they're dressed in shiny red Santa Claus suits to run 5 kilometres. Keith Wilson, head of marketing at Naomi Haas and Jack's Place, said, "The fun run has always been a standout event in the lead-up to Winchester's Christmas celebrations, and we are so excited with the response from festive runners right across the district so far. We are so grateful to everyone who has signed up, lots of whom have joined us for this event for many years and committed to support seriously ill children and young adults on good days, difficult days, and last days. This year we're hoping that over 1,000 Santas take to the streets of Winchester in support of their local hospices. Staff at the hospices expect the event to raise more than £40,000, which is enough to fund care and support for life-limited and life-threatened children, young adults and their families staying at the hospices on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Boxing Day and beyond. The run starts at the Guildhall from 8:50 a.m. with a festive Zumba warm-up before the run begins at 9 a.m. And there's a picture from last year of a lot of people standing in the snow. Don't remember any snow. People standing in the snow with a Santa disappearing in the distance as they applaud.
Council vehicles, cheaper and greener. Hampshire County Council has unveiled a new fleet of electric vehicles for its highways service, saving carbon and also money. The 17 vehicles in the highways fleet will be used by the County Council's street works team, inspecting utilities works and in the day-to-day work of highways inspectors, engineers and technicians. Councillor Rob Humby, Deputy Leader and Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment at Hampshire County Council, said, "These electric vehicles have a range of over 150 miles and will cost only 2p per mile to run, compared with the 13 pence cost per mile of the diesel vehicles they have replaced. With each member of the team covering over 50 miles per day as part of their work to examine utilities works and ensure agreed traffic management is being used to minimise disruption, this is a significant financial and carbon saving. Over the past decade, over £30 million has been made in carbon savings from the County Council's estate and operations. By the end of the year, 80 new electric car charging points will be installed across Hampshire, along with charging infrastructure at County Council offices and depots." Councillor Humby continued, "This is part of a County Council-wide programme to convert all its small vehicle fleet to electric vehicles, helping to reduce emissions and improve air quality across Hampshire, and forms part of our wider commitment to embed environmental considerations in all the work we do. These new highways vehicles are part of a total fleet of 28 Nissan Leaf vehicles plus 7 Nissan ENV200 vans in use by Hampshire County Council, with plans to increase this as current leases expire. All of these vehicles are supplied by Hampshire Transport Management, who manage Hampshire's transport fleet." And there's a picture of Councillor Rob Humby with the smart new electric vehicles. They're white with the Hampshire Highways logo along the side.
Deadline for local hero for light switch. Nominations for a Winchester hero to switch on the city centre Christmas lights have now closed. Winchester Bid had been asking for names of people who deserved to push the big red button next Thursday, the 14th of November. Nominations will now be processed and the successful people will be invited to the event starting at 4 p.m. in the Broadway. Sarah Davis, Winchester Bid's Projects and Operations Manager, said, "We are delighted to be coordinating the Switch On festivities for another year. This is a fun-filled family community event that brings together the entire city. It is also the perfect opportunity to shine the spotlight on local community heroes, which is why we will be searching for well-deserving local people to help switch on the lights. On the night, we will be encouraging the public to get involved on social media too, to tag their photos and posts with hashtag festive winch or winch lights, so we can repost and share the fun. It will be hosted by Heart Radio's Johnny Meir. Performing will be Pilgrim School Chamber Choir, the Spitfire Sisters, Hairstock Primary School, Integra 8 Dance, Theatre Royal, Rock Choir, Winchester A Cappella, Winchester University Buskers Society, and Body Translation Dance.
Call for more funding for special needs. Vulnerable children and families are being hit the hardest by funding cuts across the county. That is the conclusion of a recent report from the Education Select Committee, which says schools are struggling to support pupils with special educational needs and disabilities, acronym SEND, SEND. It comes after Hampshire County Council announced further cuts of £17.2 million to children's and young people's services as part of its 2021 transformation programme. Paula Ferguson, Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, is calling on the government to fund SEND provision properly. She said, "I've worked with a lot of children with special needs and have seen firsthand how hard it can be for families to access the support their children need. Schools do their best, but they don't have the staff, and they are working with incredibly limited resources." Local resident Charles, whose son Oliver has severe autism, told Paula it took more than 18 months to get an education, health and care plan approved before Oliver could be given a permanent place at Osborne School. He said, "We were desperately worried because I knew our son needed to be in a special school environment in order to learn and make progress. The whole process was so difficult and so long. I felt I'd have to fight to my last breath. Parents shouldn't have to fight and keep struggling for months and years just to get what their children should be entitled to." The Lib Dems are calling for councils to be given extra funding for every child who has complex educational needs. Ms. Ferguson added, "I know from personal experience the difference that proper support can make to these young people. It's not that schools aren't doing everything they can. There just isn't enough funding. This government simply isn't fully committed to helping the most vulnerable children in education. They're once again being left to sink to the bottom of the pile." There is a photograph which shows Miss Ferguson talking to Charles with Oliver, his autistic son, firmly sitting on a chair with his back turned to them.
A Winchester restaurant has closed down suddenly. Mano Thai at the Casson Block on St George's Street shut last week. The closure will be a surprise to many, as the place was highly regarded and did a lot of work for charity by hosting events. It was opened in 2016 by Shah Abdul, the brother of well-known city restaurateur Mif Kayoum. Mr. Abdul took over the premises left vacant by Bengal Sage, one of Mr. Kayoum's eateries. He was unavailable for comment. The building is owned by the City Council, and an unnamed national takeaway chain is reported to have taken over the premises. In 2016, Mr. Abdul told the Chronicle, "The support we had from the people of Winchester was so great, we just could not let go of the premises. I hope they like my take on East Asian food."
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy your week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put the label inside the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.